Jhené Angola Jr., the podcast.
Love hearing my mama's voice.
A radio show that is always welcoming to mothers, especially our mothers.
Shout out to Miss Christine.
Obviously, got to hold it down for Mrs. O, Mama O, Christine. I guess you'd be Mama G if we're going to keep that one up. So we want the brand to remain strong around here about a show for mothers. It's Jhené Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
Don't
ESPN
watch Friday
News.
Then.
Yeah, please, God, don't watch what we do on Friday. Shield your eyes, moms. Mike Golick Jr., Jhené Agumake. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the show, Pennzoil Performance Line. Excited about 10 minutes. Jhené, it is about to get real Notre Dame up in here right now.
Ugh.
Get set to talk to Chase Claypool, star wideout for the Pittsburgh Steelers and obviously former Notre Dame Fighting Irish wideout, here in about 10 minutes about his, I mean, really the last 2 weeks propelling him into a household name status for a guy that I was trying to tell people coming out of the draft all about, Jhené.
Yeah, you should have told me before so I could have picked him to my fantasy team.
Listen, I tried to shout it from the mountaintops as best I could. Only so many people will listen in this. So excited to talk to Chase.
What? Devin was the only one who gave me good advice about putting like a player you're not sure about in the flex position. You haven't given me any good advice.
Listen, I have to play against you, so I got to hold some cards in here. I'm not that good at fantasy football.
I see it, and you're beating me, so it's okay.
Exactly. Competition out here. And competition requires leadership. I want to get into some of the leadership we're seeing around the NFL right now and what usually leads to the missteps. Because Brian Flores and the Miami Dolphins have been, I think, a great example in the last couple of years of how to build and lead through some of the tougher years in building a franchise. And we saw the first misstep, and it's an easy spot at where it came from. But we did have breaking news from our own Adam Schefter that I wanted to get everyone caught up on. At the top of the show, Adam Schefter tweeted, Antonio Brown's suspension eligible to end after week 8. The Seattle Seahawks are now positioned to make a push to sign him, though they're not alone. League sources tell ESPN other teams are also interested. Remember last time we saw Antonio Brown, it was the Hard Knocks fiasco that led to his brief stint with the New England Patriots, and then ultimately the off-the-field impropriety that landed him with the suspension now with the league that is set to come up there. So we have that. And then not long before that, Raiders head coach John Gruden said he sent home all 5 of his starting offensive linemen today because they were closest to Trent Brown, one of their very high-paid offensive linemen who was placed on the COVID-19 reserve list. John Gruden's quote said, I am concerned about his health. So, Jhené, we're seeing it yet again, and we ask this question a lot. What if you had a whole position group that potentially came in contact with someone? Seeing it play out like this is another jarring reminder of what we're dealing with.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when we think about what has worked and what hasn't, I think the postponing works. But then again, it's tough because you have a limited amount of real estate for the season. But then again, you've seen teams go out there without key players. And we always remember most notably the Patriots without Cam Newton. And the show still had to go on. But when it's like a number of guys and we talk and we protect offensive linemen at all costs, right? That could really beg the question of, would there be a decline in play just because you want to push forward when it's 2 or 3 players? So I think watching and monitoring the situation happening in Las Vegas will be very informative.
And we know we've talked about health and safety is first and foremost on all this stuff with all these players. But you mentioned the competitive element that these teams, we've heard from them, the Tennessee Titans very loudly proclaiming their innocence, watching the way they handled that situation to get a win. This Las Vegas Raiders team got a great win over a division rival in the Chiefs, and now all of a sudden could be reeling and dealing without some of their best offensive linemen. So a lot to keep an eye on in that situation. Jhené Angola Jr. is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's proud to partner with our veterans by donating cars to move their lives forward, especially in times of need. Learn more about their Keys to Progress program and plans for 2020 at keystoprogress.com. But we mentioned leadership, and we want to get up on the pulpit and explore that right now. What it takes and why we're seeing a lack of it in certain spaces right now in the NFL.
So much to say.
Are you good? Like, do you need a minute to breathe? Do you need some water?
So little time.
I'm trying to balance a lot right now.
One and done.
Jhené, we've talked so much about leadership in the Dallas Cowboys locker room. The players-only meeting that is likely coming after comments were made to the NFL Network's Jane Slater about the coaches, about their ability to teach, about their ability to do their jobs in the wake of a 2-4 start that still has them in first place, but has a very upset owner. So as we look at that situation, I think it's one example side by side with what's going on with the Dolphins of how communication has to solve problems. And we talked about this before, Chinay. There is no more important factor in Dallas right now than its players getting together and getting on the same page.
Absolutely. And I think we talked about how players-only meetings are the only way that really moves forward, especially for a franchise that has been hit with significant injuries. And then also just people playing, I guess, a little bit below expectations, considering the talk going into the season was all about the Super Bowl. Like, this is a team that can really do it. And every step of the way, it's sort of been a step behind. But, you know, switching gears over to Miami, it's been really interesting following what's happening in that locker room as well, because Ryan Fitzpatrick, who is 37 years old, and we saw this from Cameron Wolf's piece on ESPN.com, he talked about how he actually felt a little bit better that man-to-man. Coach Brian Flores took him and told him the news face-to-face this morning, and that decision seemed final, so at least he knew that. But he sort of painted a picture in which, in the locker room, you have on one side, you know, clearly we talk about heartbreak when it comes to experiencing this type of news, considering the momentum your team has. And on the other side, you see Tua Tagovailoa and his happiness. Like, that is hard to deal with as a team, because instantly it sort of feels like you should be split into factions, and this is the last thing you'd want for a team that actually is making way and making grounds, you know, especially in the AFC East.
Yeah, we always thought, Chinay, with this team, the way they were positioned, Ryan Fitzpatrick, by far the oldest on that roster, the only player over 30 on that roster, that this would be a team that you could look up at and say, if anyone was positioned to understand this is about the future, we know what's coming ahead, it would be their roster. But you're right, now you've got to look, and this is the human element inside that locker room of, I'm sure everyone's excited for Tua in there, but Ryan Fitzpatrick, who we heard on Adam Schefter's podcast the other day, who is about the most self-aware teammate that you could have heard from, saying, you know, I know I'm on borrowed time, this, that, and the other. But he's human. When it all starts going well, you start to think maybe you've extended your runway. And so we saw the quotes about from Fitzpatrick on the decision to start Tua. Quote, my heart just hurt all day. It was heartbreaking for me. I've been a starter. I've been benched all kinds of different ways. But this one just really more so than any of them. I just felt fully committed and invested and felt like it was my team. And I saw in another quote he mentioned, this is really the only time outside of Buffalo that he felt like it was really his team. So, Janae, it's always the difference between saying all the right things in public and then when it finally happens, when you finally face maybe a career cliff the way Ryan Fitzpatrick might, having to deal with that reality.
And you know what makes this the hardest? In Miami, usually when you're in situations like in Dallas, you're like, okay, most of us are struggling or finding ways to find our game. When our big star Ezekiel Elliott is dropping the ball more than he normally does, when Dak Prescott is not on the field, everyone can sort of relate to that common struggle. In Miami, it's kind of different because you have evidence of them balling. You have evidence of your quarterback doing well. And then there's a change happening. And usually it's like, what have you done for me? And there are a lot of people in that locker room have done well. So I think that's the mental Olympics that's happening in Miami, contrary to what happened in Dallas.
What's happening and evolving has become very difficult. And it all centers around Chinay. And all of this, we mentioned communication in the Dallas locker room and communication here. Because Brian Flores, we heard from Ryan Fitzpatrick, finally pulled him aside and told him, but Brian Flores said, I regret that I didn't get a chance to address my team about this decision before they heard it in the media. And that lack of communication makes the discomfort in all these other places that we've talked about.
Everyone, if you're a fan of the Cowboys, a fan of the Dolphins, or if you're just fans of anarchy like we are here, listen to what the players will be saying moving forward, because I guarantee you they're going to be talking about stuff they talked about as a players only type of situation in a meeting setting.
Yep, you should hear a lot of people on the same page going forward. And we're going to
company
be excited.
Line.
We're going to be excited to hear what that company line not only is, but how it's delivered, because that can tell you a lot in this context. But coming up next, we got to get to the bottom of this question once and for all. I've heard it asked time and time again. Does Chase Claypool like the nickname Mapletron? We'll get to that next with our star receiver. It's Chinay Ngola Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chinay Ngola Jr., the podcast.
Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golick Jr. and Chinay Igwumike, all guests, join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And that's where we head to now. We're delighted to be joined by Pittsburgh Steelers second-round draft pick, wide receiver Chase Claypool, former Notre Dame Fighting Irish wide receiver, with us here now. Chase, how you doing, man?
I am doing good. Just finished up the work day, so heading back to the apartment right now.
And it's been a lot of work early on for you here this season, Chase. Take me through especially this last couple of weeks, because while people like me who follow Notre Dame football pretty religiously knew all about you, this rise to stardom in the last couple of weeks has to have been a fun ride, I imagine.
Yeah, most definitely. I think the vets are just, they just keep telling me not to get caught up in it. You know, it comes and goes. So I just got to kind of move on from kind of that attention that I've been getting.
You're here with Chase Claypool on Chenan Golic Jr. Yes, I am outnumbered right now, Pittsburgh wide receiver. Notre Dame guys rolling deep. Chase, you know, how do you feel? We've been celebrating it. How do you feel about the Mapletron nickname celebrating your Canadian roots, which is amazing because, Junior, you had the number of how many guys in the NFL come from Canada.
114 Canadian players have made NFL rosters, now including Chase Claypool.
How do you feel about Mapletron?
You know, I think Mapletron was the right play coming out of the draft with the comparison to Megatron. But in terms of kind of a nickname for the rest of my career, I don't know if I can ride with that one. I think I kind of want something that's more original, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. You know what? We're going to work on that. I have a feeling we're not done with you making big plays for this team, so we'll have a lot of cracks at this, Chase. But you mentioned the vets on that team, and the Pittsburgh Steelers organization is so well known for finding great wide receiver talent and bringing it in that building. What is it about this organization, now that you've been inside here for a while, that creates such a great spot for wide receivers to land?
Yeah, I think especially this year, the year I can speak on is, you know, we have a bunch of young receivers who are super excited to see each one of us succeed. And that's helped me a lot in the past few games, just, you know, not feeling too uncomfortable with certain situations. You know, if I'm getting more touches than someone else on the team, it's not an uncomfortable feeling. So I think that's honestly really helped me this past couple of weeks with the receiver support and kind of how they've guided me throughout this process.
And to that point, Chase Claypool with us, Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver on Chenan Golic Jr. You mentioned that Ben Roethlisberger heaped a lot of praise on Juju Smith-Schuster for just that, for celebrating your accomplishments, understanding that everybody's going to get touches. How important has Juju been in that room? Another young guy who's dealt with a lot of the things you're going through right now.
Yeah, he was one of the main guys who gave me a lot of advice when I was kind of coming in. Things to do in terms of keeping up with my body and the treatment that goes along with it. Social media advice. So he's been very helpful in kind of all aspects of my life so far.
Social media advice. I mean, he does it pretty well. Yeah. Now, Pittsburgh is really a great landing spot for you. You outlined Juju Smith-Schuster. You're able to learn from Coach Tomlin, who's just really have a stellar reputation in the NFL, and also learning from, you mentioned earlier, you know, Big Ben, who was drafted when you were 6 years old. How do you feel having watched him most of your life and now playing with him?
Yeah, I think it's definitely crazy, but like the longer you play with someone, the less crazy it is, if that makes sense. So the first time it was definitely super cool to have cash from him, but now it's just like you got to take the professional approach and just say now it's my quarterback, and it's not like, you know, Big Ben as everyone else sees him. So still cool though.
And what have those conversations been like? Because he is, I mean, one of the best quarterbacks we've seen in this era. He's a guy with such command of that offense. So when you first got to Pittsburgh, what were some of your conversations like with Ben about what you guys saw for your role in this offense?
Yeah, he just told me how important it was going to be for me to get the playbook because there's the playbook that's on paper, and then there's the playbook that Ben has in his little mastermind or whatever is going on. So he likes to change things on the fly. So if I wasn't able to get the playbook down, then I wasn't going to be able to get what he does down. So he just told me to get the playbook down. That was the first thing I did, and everything else came a little easier.
We are chatting with Chase Claypool, Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver out of Notre Dame. And one thing about that transition, it's looked really smooth for you, Chase. When you think about, you know, all the difficulties it took to get this season going, how have you been able to manage all of that transition going from college to the pros and then also producing?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've had a really good program in terms of the off-season training, working out in California, proactive. through Athletes First. I know that was kind of a little marketing thing, but I think they did a really good job preparing me for this. And, you know, I worked out with TJ Dispenzata in the off season, and, you know, he really got me right. So just the little things in the off season kind of helped me to get to where I'm at now.
Chase, we've talked so much about the influences around the building, what's gotten you here now, and Janae mentioned him before. Mike Tomlin is such a, from the outside looking in, such a big character. He's got all the sayings. What's he like on the inside? What's the day-to-day like with Mike Tomlin outside of all of the big, you know, the standard is the standard sayings that we get in the public?
I think he's a really funny dude. You know, he always calls me like young pup, and sometimes I'll be like trying to I'll be like, all right, guys, let's have a good period. And then he'll tell me, like, nah, just worry about yourself. Like, just do what you got to do. He doesn't want to hear that from one dude just yet. So.
Here with Chase Claypool, again, Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver. Now, we're all athletes here. Junior, out of your own school. I went to Stanford. Don't shame me for that, please, Chase. Now, I was just wondering, you know, when we transition to the pros, we always have a moment where it's like, oh, this is the welcome to the league moment. It happened to me with Tamika Catchings. She crossed me up and I fell to the ground, but she didn't make the shot. Have you had that moment yet in the NFL?
Not yet, but I know I'm going to be going across the middle. I'll probably get hit pretty hard or something, and that's going to happen. So I've been cognizant of that. But nothing too crazy so far. Nothing too crazy. I haven't got crossed up yet.
Keep the streak alive.
I was going to say, you've been doing pretty well right now, so I think other people have had to worry about that coming from your end here. So, Chase, it's been a lot of fun to watch, man, as someone who watched a lot of you in an Irish uniform to see the success here in Pittsburgh, man. So best of luck with everything going forward, and I'm sure we'll try and talk to you again soon.
Yeah, no doubt. Appreciate you guys having me on the show.
Again, that was Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver Chase Claypool, kind enough to give us a few minutes here. Janae, doesn't it just feel better? You get two Notre Dame guys in one room. Life just a little bit lighter around here.
Don't worry. We're going to flip that energy right on its head later in the show.
Oh, there we go. I'm sure if anyone can find a way to pull that off, it's you in this. So we'll worry about later when it comes to being later. But coming up next, with so much news around the NFL today, again, the news about Antonio Brown's suspension being up after week 8 and the Seahawks potentially pursuing him, try and get a beat on who else might be in the running for one of the most talented wide receivers, but certainly one of the most controversial in the NFL. We'll do that with our guest next. It's Janae Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Understanding the move is one thing. Communicating it properly to give Tua and that team the best chance, completely different. It's Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Janae Agwumike, we're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And we're delighted to be joined now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. You can catch her every day as the host of NFL Live at 4 p.m. Eastern here on ESPN, as well as hosting SEC Nation for us, the great Laura Rutledge stopping by. Laura, how you doing? Oh, and as we get to her, she is disconnected. We're hopeful to get Laura back here in a second. Going to be a great resource. Janae, I looked up to start our show, and I got the news from Laura and Adam Schefter that Antonio Brown's suspension was eligible to be up after week 8, and he was going to then be pursued. It sounded like a lot by the Seattle Seahawks. Other teams may be involved in this as well. But also, she is someone who has been nails on the Tua Tagovailoa reporting every step of the way in this process. So to see him now getting ready to finally shine on the field with the backdrop of how this starting job information was communicated seems like a tough spot for a guy that's just trying to go out there and start game one for him.
Yeah, because that's what he seems to just focus on, just playing good football. And his play is what really inspires a lot of folks. And on the contrary, it's been Ryan Fitzpatrick and his play that has inspired his team, that has created the opportunity for Tua to really play. So I guess it's, like we talked about it earlier, it's a lot of split emotions, but these, I guess, big scheme of things, if you're in Miami, these are good problems to have. Like, you have a quarterback that is available, a quarterback that is ready for the opportunity, but you also have another quarterback in Ryan Fitzpatrick that is capable as well.
Yeah, but I think these are problems you didn't need in this spot in particular, just because I thought about it kind of in the reverse way you just described. You had the luxury of Ryan Fitzpatrick playing the kind of football that he was in this season, which is not a guarantee for him at this point. But you knew eventually we were going to be able to put Tua in the best possible spot to succeed. We'll see if that's capable now. And I believe we have got her back now. The great Laura Rutledge joining us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Laura, how you doing?
I'm great, guys. I'm not going to move spots here so that hopefully I can stay with you, but great to be with you guys.
It's a lot like back in the day when I used to have to walk around the room and hold my phone up to the ceiling to see if I could get reception. So I'll age myself. I'll age myself a little bit on that one. But Laura, I just mentioned to Shanae, I look up at the start of our show, which is when NFL Live that you host starts at 4 o'clock Eastern, and we got the breaking news. Antonio Brown's suspension eligible to be up after Week 8, and the reports from Adam Schefter, and you guys talked about this off the top, that the Seattle Seahawks strongly pursuing him. What more did you guys learn through the day about Antonio Brown and the teams that might be involved in going after a certainly talented but controversial receiver?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there's been this thought for forever that, you know, Antonio Brown would have to serve an 8-game suspension once he already got signed by somebody. But that's just not the case from Adam Schefter's reporting. And we're in a position now where, you know, if Antonio Brown ends up getting signed by one of these teams, it seems like the Seahawks, according to Schefter, are making a really strong push, be eligible to play as early as Week 9. Which is just wild. I mean, you just think about what that Seahawks team, let's say he goes there, would look like with him on it. They've already got DK Metcalf, who's performing at a great level, and then Lockett, of course, and Russell Wilson, who's a guy that looks like the MVP already, or at least making a strong case, and then you're going to add an extra weapon like Antonio Brown. And I don't know, guys, if he's going to be totally ready to play, but I got to think that he's going to be pretty much ready to go. You think about when we saw him come into action last year for the Patriots, and he really only played in that one game, but had 4 catches for 56 yards. He contributed. He was part of their offense. I think that we would see him come in ready to go. And then it's just a matter of if that Seahawks team can stomach some of the issues that have come along with Antonio Brown. I mean, it's no secret, as you said, controversial player in the NFL.
So basically, the rich could get richer, high risk, high reward, all on the Seahawks decision pattern. And Laura, you're here with us, ESPN NFL Live host on Shanae and Golic Jr. You know, going from the NFL to college where you followed Tua so well, you know, there's a transition happening in Miami. And it seems as if Ryan Fitzpatrick might not be as okay with the move as we heard yesterday. But you followed Tua so well. Why do you think the Dolphins made this decision to go this route?
Well, everything that we've heard from the Dolphins is that despite Fitzpatrick being surprised, which you feel bad for him when you hear how heartbroken he was to learn that he had essentially lost the job, but this was the plan all along, and Fitzpatrick himself has even said that. He knew he was there to help Tua along and also to try to win some games and do his job and certainly all of that, but it was going to be Tua's team at some point. And so I think that this was timed perfectly with how they wanted to. They've got a bye week on their side, so Tua's got an extra week of preparation, you know, to get ready for the Rams that they'll be seeing. Of course, Aaron Donald on the other side, that's sort of a scary prospect. But either way, that's what Tua's going to be facing when he makes his first NFL start. And when you think about what's gone into it for Tua, and I think a big piece of this is the Dolphins talking about just even in practice and preparation how he's wowed him. I realize that's not in a game, although we did see him complete his first couple NFL passes last week. But I'm telling you guys, having spent a lot of time around Tua Tagovailoa and watched him in game and in practice and all of that, that ball comes out of that left hand and just looks different. And when he is healthy, which he is now, and when you see him playing with the ability that he has, you just say, wow, that would give us a better chance to win than a lot of people. And I know it's high praise, but I firmly believe that, and I think many who have followed him and watched him play would believe that too. Another thing too that I think is real important is, you know, this Dolphins offense doesn't have to look that different. They were kind of RPO based anyway, and that is Tua's strength. And so I think we'll see a lot of those similarities, a lot of those concepts that he excelled in when he was healthy in college come to fruition and make him more comfortable in his first start.
Laura, you mentioned it just looking different coming out of his hands. I was so taken aback, and I saw Mina said the same thing on your guys' show and on Twitter. That first passing through, it was a reminder, oh, we've got a lefty on our hands. And everyone was a little caught off guard in that moment. But, Laura, in addition to that big news that we know was such a story in the last couple of days, what's going on with the Cowboys now? Leaks coming out of the locker room, anonymous player quotes, discontent with the coaching staff there potentially in this situation. Laura, is it safe to say that that with all of this wailing and gnashing of teeth, it starts and ends with Jerry Jones and what he's established with the roster he's put together?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's real hard, guys, to figure out who exactly to blame for these Cowboys situations. And you kind of just sit there and go down the line and you think, okay, well, it could be this guy, could be McCarthy, could be, Ezekiel Elliott. The list goes on and on. It could be Amari Cooper. But really, at the end of the day, Jerry Jones is in charge of leading that franchise and putting together a roster. And I'll say this, I mean, I still never hated the CeeDee Lamb pick. So I don't blame it on the draft. I actually think that picking CeeDee Lamb, thinking that Dak Prescott's your quarterback at that time, you know, you're feeling real good about your offense. You're thinking maybe your defense could get better, but your offense is going to carry the weight of the team. I don't hate the pick, but you're right. This was not a defense, especially in the secondary, that was going to be able to have the success that they would need to have to compete. I think, too, I mean, who knows? But does Jerry Jones look around the NFC East and say, well, golly, I mean, look at all these other teams. So we don't have to be that good to win this division. And my goodness, they're still at the top of the NFC East or least or whatever you want to call it. So maybe he was sort of right, and maybe we're all sitting here just talking about how bad the Cowboys are, because frankly they have looked so poor, but they're still in that bad division. So who knows how it'll all end up shaking out, but I think we can all agree that what the Eagles have done with a decimated roster in a lot of ways, and certainly the Cowboys dealing with their own injuries, especially on the O-line, but what the Eagles have done has made them look like a better team, even if they don't have necessarily the record to show for it. So I would say at the end of the day, to answer your question, yeah, it falls on Jerry Jones' shoulders, but it's been such a breakdown throughout the different levels of the team that I just wonder how this is all going to end up shaking out. And my final point on it, guys, Dak Prescott deserves to be paid whatever Dak Prescott wanted to be paid. And if there was ever evidence of this, it's been these past, you know, couple of weeks, but really just last week. But either way, it's been what they've looked like without him. They missed Dak Prescott so much, and I just think that's been so evident in all of this.
It really is. I'm glad you brought that up at the end here, Laura. Couldn't have said it any better. We all hope that everyone has seen in his absence what his presence is worth to that franchise. So you guys can check her out every day as the host of NFL Live here on ESPN. Also host an SEC Nation for us on the weekends. Laura, always fun. We'll talk to you
soon.
Thanks,
Laura.
Thanks, guys.
It's so true in a lot of this. And she's right. I'm totally with her on the draft for the Cowboys in this spot, and with her on the comparison to the Philadelphia Eagles, because that team has been as banged up as any team in football, even going back to their Super Bowl season. And guess what we haven't seen? A lot of what we're hearing right now out of the Cowboys locker room.
Very true. Communication issues.
Communication issues are key. We don't want any communication issues here. Chanae and Golic Jr. Nope. Reminding you, be a part of Chanae and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. It's official. College football's back, and so is your favorite Dr. Pepper-loving college football town, Fansville. Head to a store near you to treat your inner college football fan to an ice-cold 20-ounce Dr. Pepper today. Big Ten coming back this weekend is certainly big news, but we got to head down to the Bayou because one of the brightest young stars in the NBA maybe just got the most online coach in the league. We'll tell you who that is next. It's Chanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Trouble in Big D. Some drama for the Dolphins building up right now. Communication can solve you a lot of problems, and thankfully, I don't think that will be an issue for one NBA franchise going forward. It's Chanae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Our thanks to Laura Rutledge for joining us here in the last segment, getting us all caught up to speed on some of the breaking news in the NFL. But Chanae, we had NBA breaking news today. The man himself, one of the more online human beings over the last calendar year, Tweetmaster General Stan Van Gundy, announced as the new head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans. Obviously, everyone's first thought, Zion Williamson sitting there, one of the bright hopes and futures for the NBA. What do you think of this hire, especially knowing what he's walking into with this star?
He is one of basketball's favorite people. And so his personality, I think we all came to love, especially this year in the playoffs as he was covering games. Now his ability to translate what he's communicating, talking about communicating, he's one of the best at communicating the game and breaking it down in real time as an analyst. And I feel like that's going to be his strength with his players because he has a young core of young, talented players, most notably Zion Williamson. He also has this year's, or is it last year's because the season's over, most improved player in Brandon Ingram. He has a nice little core to start working with for him to communicate how they can get better and improve. And I think that's where that's going to go. You know, it's going to be a long-term type of project, even though Zion gives them a quick, a fast track to success. So I think this is good all the way around. It's someone that the players, young players especially, can relate to. It's someone that knows the game, is up to speed on the game. It's someone that has another guy in his back pocket that can always give him advice, Jeff Van Gundy, his brother, which is fun. But most importantly, you know, when he was back with, because I think this is his fourth team he's been a head coach for, Miami Heat, Orlando Magic, and Detroit Pistons. A lot of times when he came out there, like, it's not necessarily the time in which we compare now, you know, with analytics and the amount of threes we shoot, but he was sort of forward thinking because when he was with the Orlando Magic, I believe Dwight Howard was there.
Yep.
And they were playing four round one when back then it was supposed to be two guys at the rim, right? Oh my gosh. If only we had the good old days where we could have two posts on the floor. Like, it sounds so long time ago.
I was gonna say the post player in you is really coming out here. I just saw like the most far away look in your eyes, Janae, as you look back, like, damn, we used to really put two post players on the floor at
one
time.
Remembering that, you know, now it's two forwards and one of them better be able to shoot, right? He made that decision in Orlando. It's like, all right, we've got Dwight Howard, we've got a beast at both ends, surround him with shooters, and that's why they were super successful. So I think this touches a lot of aspects in which things will be good for them. Development, communication, and most importantly, harvesting the young talent.
Yeah, and I think that communication, it's Janae Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio. I think that communication, especially because we've seen, like we said, if you want to know where Stan Van Gundy stands on something, just go check his Twitter account right here. You saw me almost do the Jeff thing, right?
No, I was going to say, if you want to know where Stan stands.
If you want to know where Stan stands or what Stan stands, go check
what
his
Stan
Twitter
stands
account.
For.
Because he is very out front with a lot of his views, and especially Janae now at this time where athletes are being more vocal on a lot of these issues. And I think it's been more important than ever. Like, I still have in my mind, because you mentioned that Orlando Magic stint that Stan had with Dwight Howard there, a couple of those uncomfortable press conferences where Stan's being asked about Dwight, and when Dwight walks up during the press conference and puts his arm around Stan and they're trying to act like everything's all hunky-dory there, like, obviously it wasn't always perfect, but do you think given Zion's personality especially, I can't imagine there's a lot of those issues, especially because it is a young team that you just described too.
Yeah, I think this is a good scenario because a lot of times you need balance, and we're seeing this in the NBA. I think the Lakers are a really good example of this. A lot of people were critical of the Frank Vogel hire, and we talked about the people that sort of weren't able to be chosen based on money or based on who LeBron or the top tier talent wanted. They settled on Frank Vogel, which has worked out really well. Why? Because his personality is so different than what LeBron's is, and even Rondo is, and then Anthony Davis trying to come into the situation and exert his confidence. Like, he was that cool, calm, collected guy that really was rock steady throughout all the different changes of the season. And now you go to New Orleans where you have a lot of like fun young guys on the team, Hart and Ingram and Ball and all of that, especially Zion Williamson. You need someone that is not afraid to tell them exactly what to do. And Stan is outspoken when he needs to be, and he does it from a place of love and passion. We're talking about basketball, and we're also talking about bigger than basketball type of things. So I feel like personality matters so much. And you look around the league, teams that are able to get that buy-in based on the personality of the coach or even the pedigree. You can look at Miami and what Eric Spoelstra was able to do. His pedigree combined with his personality and those vets like Udonis Haslem and them, like, it all works out. And to me, this is sort of touching on everything in New Orleans.
And so, Janae, you hit all those points holistically for an organization that you're trying to jumpstart because you know you've got this bright young talent. We saw the celebration in the ticket office for the Pelicans when Zion signed on there, so we know what the expectations are. But real quickly, it's going to be very interesting to see how all of these are lumped into an NBA season that going forward, and for you guys in the W as well, what it's going to look like. We know we had a bubble for a shortened season, but is this going to be a more normal looking season coming up? Are we flirting with a bubble idea anymore? I mean, for you guys early on in the W talks, I had imagined this is some difficult things you're trying to sort through.
We will play in the safest place necessary, but at the same time, I think what the WNBA players went through in the bubble, they probably wouldn't want to just sign on to again unless it's done in a way more realistic, more, you know, something that satisfies more of their mental health aspects with, you know, being able to leave and all that type of stuff, doing things safely. We're seeing leagues do that with some stumbles, but do it. And I think that's where the WNBA is sort of moving towards.
It's going to be very interesting. And this is something we'll be able to get into more as we get closer. The mental health aspect of what these players just went through in that bubble and would they sign up for it again? But coming up next, we got to head back into the NFL because for the Dolphins, how it started was 3-3. How it is going now might get a little interesting. That's next. It's Shanae and Golic Jr.